Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Welcome to Ethnically Ambiguous, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hi!
Hi, Shireen.
Hi,
I panicked. I'm sorry. This is Ethnically Ambiguous.
This is an amazing episode. We cannot wait for you guys to meet and get to know this guest. It's Nithya Raman.
Yes, and we're going to get started a little early because she has something to tell you. Hit it, Nithya.
Well, you know, the thing that's been most exciting about this campaign is to tell people that our response to the housing crisis and our homelessness crisis here in Los Angeles is a choice.
Yeah.
When you look at tents on the streets here, this is a choice by our elected officials to not respond to people's needs with the kinds of services and support and shelter and housing that they need. Yeah. And that's what I really want to make clear with the campaign.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? We're going to go into our theme song. We're going to come back and we are going to get into it.
Yes.
And
you're going to learn about Nithya's life and how she got into this position and why you're going to vote for her next month, this month, whenever this comes out.
Yeah. So stay tuned.
Stay right there.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi, Shireen.
Hi, Anna.
Wow, what an episode.
This is exciting. I'm really excited to talk to this guest we have today. We always like talk about the guests and then we introduce them, which I'm realizing now in the moment is silly because they're looking right at us, you know, every time.
Classic us. This guest I've been following online. Mm-hmm, I've been watching her work.
Yeah, same.
And then I was like, what if I DM'd her? Yeah. It's like, and then it worked.
It was a cold DM. A cold DM panned out, you know? Joining us in studio today, I always say people's names. I'm nervous.
You can do this. Shireen freaks out. It's
Nithya Raman.
There you go.
Ramen.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
I panicked because I was like, I don't want to call her ramen like the food because what if that's wrong?
It is ramen like the food.
I mean, that's a nice way for people to remember.
Yeah,
ramen like the food.
Very easy.
You know? But Nithya, I said that right?
Yes.
Great. I should have asked you before we press record, but you know what? We're just going with the flow.
But you might know her as at Nithya for the city.
Yeah.
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 Well, I guess the at's just for Instagram, but...
I mean, hopefully if you're following the right people, they've been sharing that her campaign is going on, that elections are coming up. Shout out to Mitra Juhari for, like, really being, like, a really active voice right now in the community. I really appreciate her.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're running... Well, for people outside of L.A., you're running for District 4...
L.A. City Council.
L.A. City Council. Yeah. Yes. And that, for non-LA people, well, too bad. This is very interesting. She's a very interesting person. So you get to hear about her and then hopefully you get to watch her win and we get to celebrate all together.
But for non-LA people, like this is a very significant, I believe you're a very significant person to first of all run and then will get elected because not only are you a person of color, but you've done work abroad. You did work in India that we'll get into. And as a city planner, I think I don't think people really understand what that job means. We had an urban designer slash planner on the show, and we kind of got into like what that means. But I think from a political angle and like from a campaign, I think people should know what, like, because everyone lives in a city and has a city council. So just understanding what that is, I think, is important. Even if you don't live in LA.
Yeah.
We just have the LA insight.
Well, and also I think the campaign is premised on this idea that we all should get involved locally.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that has been exciting and empowering about this campaign has been as we watch national politics kind of
implode.
Like, we don't know what's going to happen. Yeah, sometimes it's exciting and exhilarating, and sometimes it's just incredibly depressing.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like there's this real opportunity to make change at the local level, and that's been so positive. And I am so excited about it that I want to get everyone else doing it too, just because I feel like people are so depressed nowadays.
Yeah,
no, you're totally right.
I also feel like just in reading following you on Instagram. I don't read. I scroll, you know. That's how I get all my information. But your focus on homelessness is fucking great.
Yeah.
Because I was literally the other day, I think it was yesterday, reading an article about how there were council people in LA. They're not even talking about homelessness. They're like talking about the World Series and how the Dodgers need a trophy. Like, I was like, who cares?
Yeah.
The Dodgers will be fine.
I think they're conflating or like they're not understanding what it means to have an LA community. They're thinking like everyone loves the Dodgers, that's a community of LA, but not realizing like the LA community is in large part the people that don't actually have a roof over their heads. And yeah. I think they're missing the mark. I think they're just trying to get like people being like, "Yeah, I love the Dodgers too. Fuck yeah." And not realizing that like the majority of people, they don't have the luxury of even caring about sports. They're trying to survive every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, so, and we'll never see that Dodger trophy, really. Who knows?
Who fucking cares?
Yeah.
Like, who cares either way?
Anyway.
Regardless, we both want to get into your life, and then we can get into your campaign.
Okay, that sounds great.
So, okay, we're going back.
Okay, let's go back.
Let's rewind.
Where were you born?
Yeah. I was actually born in India.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the southern part of India, in a state called Kerala.
Kerala.
Uh-huh. And my family speaks Tamil, so it's not the language of Kerala is different, but we're Keralites.
I don't think I've met a Keralite.
They might call themselves Malayali because that's what they speak is Malayalam. But
interesting.
Yeah.
So why does your parent or your family speak Tamil, you said?
Tamil. There's just a lot of internal migration in India. So a lot of people who speak a language from a different region will move to a different state or something like that.
Interesting. Right.
Yeah. But we're Tamilians who were living in Kerala. And I moved to America when I was 6 years old.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Why did your parents immigrate?
My dad was studying at the University of Southwestern Louisiana. Mm-hmm. He wanted to get a master's. He got a master's in India, and then he was working in India, but really wanted to...
What was the master's in? What was he studying?
He was studying engineering.
Of course.
Yes.
Both of our dads are engineers.
Yes.
Or have engineering degrees.
Right.
Yeah.
So he was getting his master's, and then my mom and I joined him as he was finishing up, and then he got a job outside of Boston, so we moved up there with him.
Is that where you live primarily, or?
Growing up, yeah. I lived up in a suburb of Boston.
And were you only child?
I was for a long time. Oh. Then my parents had another child when I was almost 15.
Oh, that's a big gap.
Yeah,
big gap. So nice. You must have been, I mean, you probably had a good hand in raising your sibling, right? As a 15.
Or were you like, get out of here, you little snot.
Or alternatively, you probably like went to college after that pretty shortly after.
I mean, he lives in LA now, actually, mm-hmm. and he went to UCLA.
Nice.
And part of the reason he went to UCLA was because I was here.
Yeah.
And
so you guys are close?
We're close. We're really close. So
that's
amazing. You know, he's a baby to me.
Yeah, of course.
But he's also one of my closest friends,
which has been really nice. I was going to ask, when your dad decided to study out here for his family or your mom's family, was that like a new thing like for the family to have like, oh, my son is going to go study in America? Or do you have a lot of family here, extended family?
We have some extended family here. My dad's brother first came and then my dad followed. So, which is, I think, a pretty common immigrant story.
Yeah.
But my dad's side of the family was always really entrepreneurial.
Mm.
We have some interesting kind of journeys in my dad's side of the family. One of my first cousins is an actress in India.
Oh.
And her parents encouraged her to do that from a very young age. Yeah, and she was, you know, quite well known there.
Yeah.
And she's continuing to act now, although she's her roles have changed. But it's like their family was always
just like, go do what we want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, supportive.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah. I mean, it's very, it's just a rare thing, especially like that must have been like a generation or two ago. So, or one generation.
One generation. Well, my cousin is my generation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I like that though. I don't know.
Yeah.
I always like hearing about like just like the atypical route that someone can take. And not only that, but like being supported in that route.
Yeah.
So I like that. When you were growing up in Boston primarily, what were your interests? Like, what did you like?
What did you get up to?
Yeah.
What did I get up to?
Or your hobbies as a kid.
Oh, my goodness. I haven't thought about that period in a while. Like, what was I doing?
Gosh. I have a belief that we always kind of go back to being a kid at some point in our adulthood. Like, we relearn what we liked as a child, and that, like, influences what we are as an adult.
Yeah. No, I think that that's right. I mean, I spent so much time alone. Mm-hmm. When I was a kid, you know, I was an only child for a long time. Both my parents worked, so mm-hmm. I would let myself into the house by myself, mm-hmm. you know, after school.
Yeah.
And I watched a ton of TV. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I watched so many hours of television. It's kind of insane that I even got decent grades because.
Yeah.
I mean, me too.
Yeah.
But I feel also like it was when you're a child of immigrants and your parents are kind of like, this is how things are done. You're like, I need a connection to, like, the outside world for me to, like, really get it. Like, mm-hmm. I don't get that certain, like, I don't see the food. Like, my classmates eat. I don't see what they're paying. Like, I don't see Christmas as a thing. Like, my parents just don't celebrate Christmas. So it's like, I got all my entertainment and how things are supposed to work from TV.
Yeah.
It's like a learning device for
us.
It is
a learning device.
It's just, like, it's a way to observe the people that you're around. That, like, honestly, it's like studying them. Like, that's how I viewed it. Like, I was just like, oh, that's what people do? Like, okay. Like,
And I don't know if you guys had this, too, but. I always had weird gaps in my cultural knowledge. So mm-hmm. because I watched a ton of MTV growing up, mm-hmm. I feel like I was really up to date on current day music.
Yeah.
But then people would be like, yeah, you know, my dad was listening to the Beatles. And I'd be like, huh?
Yeah. Oh, my God. I've never had someone describe it so accurately, like a cultural gap.
Yeah.
But that's totally how I feel about so many things. I just say that, like, I'm not savvy with American culture, but that's totally it.
Yeah.
Like, I know so much about Michael Jackson because my mom loved listening to him and George Michael, but I don't know anything about the Beatles. I don't know anything about Woody Allen films. Like, all these things that were so, like, Americana. I'm just like,
How I feel about movies. Like, my parents weren't showing me, like, what is it, Back to the Future?
No.
Like, I had no sense of any of
that. Same. I never watched an episode of Seinfeld. Like, it was just all these things that were just like, America. As an adult, I was like, what are the Sopranos? Like,
your gaps are different because you're younger than me.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay.
Yeah, right. But then I'm sure your gaps are different than mine. You know everything about. But not only are you a child of immigrants, but you're also an immigrant.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have, like, a memory or, like, what do you remember about being an immigrant as a kid, if you do remember anything at all? Like, did you feel different or, like, you must have had a little bit of an accent? Like, even though I was born here, but then we immigrated when I was a month old and then we came back when I was a little bit older. So I had an accent growing up and me and my sister were teased relentlessly because of it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, where did you grow up?
Mostly Southern California.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's good to know that there was teasing outside of Boston, because Boston, I got teased a lot.
Yeah?
I feel like Boston would be, you would feel like just culturally you think it'd be tougher than like SoCal, but these people are everywhere. People want to,
kids are mean.
Yeah
they're kids
brutal.
Are mean.
They're brutal.
Yeah.
Oh, man,
I mean, I guess it wasn't just the accent. I will say, I think it's a combination of just sticking out.
Yeah.
Like, it was the accent. My mom would dress us in her, like, cute clothes, but, like, we had glasses at a young age. She gave us those, like, bands that you put on the end of the glasses so you won't lose them, like the necklace. So, like, only old people wear them, but I had them at 7. But little things like that where it's like, she's a freak. Yeah.
She was frugal. Yeah. Well, I think actually more than my immigrant background, I would say at one point the doctor diagnosed me as having a lazy eye.
Oh.
So apparently this eye is way weaker than my left eye is weaker than my right eye. And so at some point they made me wear a patch.
Oh, my God.
To fix it.
To fix it, which is really common. So I think probably the thing that made me stick out was my eye patch.
Right, right.
And yeah.
And it wasn't like a black eye patch. It wasn't, you know, like a, you know, like a pirate.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a nude-colored eye patch. Oh. So from a distance.
In an attempt to, like, make your, like, a skin color?
Yeah, but to me that was always so weird because then it would just kind of look like you had a...
Like a mound?
Like a weird,
Yeah.
Oh, God.
So I think maybe that contributed.
It's so hard as a little kid to just, like, have an eye patch.
Also, they don't have, like, culturally, like, for, like, any sort of, like, brown person. They're not like, oh, sorry, we only have white people eye patches.
Yeah, this is the white nude. Yeah. There's no brown nude.
Hopefully we've come further than that. Who knows?
Yeah,
hopefully.
I don't know. Yeah.
Wow. I only learned recently that they use the eye patch to fix it. Because my mom told me, because I guess she had a lazy eye when she was younger, and they just gave her, like, very thick glasses instead. Huh. I don't know. So she was like, they were, like, so thick, and her eyes would look really small when she wore them because that's how just it comes through. And I was like, that's how they fixed them. And then I think there was a comedian who had a bit about it. Cameron Esposito, I guess, also wore one as a kid. And that's when I learned, like, oh, that's, I don't really understand how it works.
Yeah. Well, one of my best friends wore one.
Yeah, they make one of your eyes work harder. Yeah. So it's like if you cover up the good eye, then the bad eye has to work harder.
Has to put in the work.
Just to even it out after a certain amount of time. That's the goal, right? Just to
exactly.
Eventually when you take it off, the goal is like, oh, it worked hard enough to catch up.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. Wow. It seems like it shouldn't work that way.
No, it's kind of like an archaic way of fixing a problem.
It feels like
I don't know.
But I, you know.
I mean, look at you now.
Yeah, look at me now. Yeah.
No eye patch.
You've come a long way.
Great vision.
Yeah.
Excellent vision.
You might, I mean, maybe bring it back for the campaign. You never know. Maybe it'll just.
Should that be my signature?
Yes.
Look.
Pirate.
Yeah. Just a nude colored eye patch.
Yeah, but now it's like the real nude.
Maybe. Yeah,
right.
Like my color nude. Yeah, and maybe it should be part of my platform.
Yeah, 100%.
I'm working harder.
Housing justice. Yeah. Ooh.
Ooh. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. That's a good.
That's really good.
I'm so glad we're workshopping this right now.
It's like a true immigrant story. Yeah. It's like I had to make that other work harder,
and now I'll work harder for you.
Yeah. As my parents wanted me to just do my thing.
Yeah.
Get both eyes strong. I mean, it really is kind of an immigrant story of the eye.
It really is.
I should release a video about it.
Oh my God, you should.
That would be interesting. It's a true struggle. Like, no child can walk around with an eye patch without the other children being like, what's up with that?
What's under that?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, no.
Well, thank you. Man. Thank you for sharing that
with
us.
Thank you. It's a vulnerable moment in your life.
Yeah. So, okay, beyond
delighted that that could emerge as part of this campaign.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I mean, the struggle is the struggle is so real. It's like you really have to go through these things to be I feel like I can see, like I went through it myself. I know what it's like to be othered because of something you have no control over.
Yeah.
It's like, sorry, my eye isn't as strong.
Yeah.
I did what I had to do to get where I am today. Well. Yeah. Other than that, was there anything else, like, just because you were, like, this immigrant from India, like, in Boston, were you surrounded by a lot of white people? I haven't really been to Boston.
Yeah, it wasn't a very, you know, it was mostly white students at my school. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of racism directed at people from South Asia because there was a lot of South Asian immigrants coming to that part of Boston because we lived on this just off of this highway that was a big, it was called Technology Corridor. So there was like a ton of tech companies that were headquartering in that area. And so then a lot of South Asian engineers and IT professionals came to settle in that area. Mm-hmm. So I was going to high school and middle school at a time when the numbers of South Asian immigrants to the area were increasing a lot.
Yeah.
And so I think there was just a destabilizing thing for that part of the country.
Yeah.
And people did not respond to it. Right. Super great. But now I think it's better. You know, I think young
people. Hope so, yeah.
Yeah, like my brother, he didn't grow up in the same town that I did, but my parents are still out in the Boston area. And he didn't really experience any of the racism that I did. He was beloved and, you know, I mean, he is lovely.
So yeah.
He should listen to this episode.
So he should. It's only about him.
This is dedicated to Akash Raman.
Yes.
My brother.
Nice.
I love it.
Did your dad work in that sort of tech corridor?
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. He worked in a software company there.
And what did your mom do?
My mom also worked for, she did some technology work and then a few years ago she stopped working.
Hmm.
Good for her. So, yeah.
Yeah. They were just hustling. Stop the working. Immigrant life. Yeah. But I mean, it sounds like you were raised pretty independent. Like you were always just like on your own and looking after yourself and stuff like that. Did that influence what you, when you were in like in high school, like were you like set what you wanted to do or did your parents like help you like guide you at all?
They did. I mean, they encouraged me to be ambitious for sure. And I think they had very high hopes for me, probably higher than I did for myself, to be honest.
Yeah.
But yes, I always had this independent streak, and I don't know that the path I chose was what they wanted at all.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, but, what were you thinking in high school when people were like, what do you want to do with your life?
Well, all I wanted to do was get as far away from Boston as possible.
That's exactly how I felt. I chose the furthest college I got into, and I never had gone there, like visited anything. It was wild.
You're like, bye.
Yeah.
So what were, okay.
I mean, well, it was still in California. It was maybe like a 9-hour drive.
But still,
that was far enough.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't end up actually going to college that far, but I was like, I'm going to go to college in California. Mm-hmm. I had all these, you know, I had lists of all these California colleges I wanted to go to. I had these escape fantasies, you know, of leaving Boston and reinventing myself as a totally new person. But beyond that, I had no idea of what I wanted to study. Actually, so I ended up going to Harvard as an undergrad. And the thing that was most surprising to me about going there was like how many people came to school or came to college knowing what they wanted to do and knowing what they wanted the rest of their lives to look like.
And I never understood that.
I never understood that either. And I could never tell whether that was me coming in as an immigrant or just who I was as a person, just didn't have a strong sense of my future.
Yeah.
But I was so impressed with them. Mm-hmm. You know, some people would come in, they'd be like, I want to be a professor. I want to work in government. I'm going to be a politician. I'm going to do this. And I was like, what classes am I going to do? I could study anything.
I felt the exact same way.
Yeah. I also feel like Harvard, there's a certain type of person who, when they, like, I'm going to Harvard, I'm going to become this, I'm going to major in this.
Yeah.
There's like almost like, I don't know.
Like a checklist.
Yeah. We went to UC Davis. So like it was, I don't feel like we had, it's a good school, but it's not like
intense.
Berkeley, like where you're like, these people know what they're doing. We were kind of like, okay, we're here.
But shouldn't be that. I mean, honestly, isn't that what college is about?
Yeah,
is to discover yourself and find out who you are and really have the chance to explore.
That's what it should be.
Yeah, totally. And I feel very grateful, to be honest. And I know that a lot of the things that I've been able to do in my life have been the result of, you know, some incredible personal fortune. Like my parents, I didn't have college debt when I left undergrad because my parents paid for it.
Yeah.
And I was then able to go and work in India, you know, and I did all kinds of cool things when I was in India, and I was able to do that work. And then when I got my master's in urban planning, I had a scholarship. So I didn't have any debt coming out of there either. And so I was able to go back to India. Mm-hmm. And you know, the work that I've been able to do, I danced with a dance company when I was in India.
Oh, wow.
I used to be a professional dancer and toured India with this dance company that was based, first a Delhi-based dance company and then a Southern Indian-based dance company. I worked at human rights organizations. I lived in all of these little tiny homes all over the cities where I was living in. And it's, in a way, if I had planned out my life and if I had known exactly that this, I wanted
you had a rigid schedule.
I had a path to follow. I would never have been able to have the experiences that I did and to meet the people that I did. So I just, in some ways, I know it was buttressed by some of the family support that I had.
Yeah.
But I feel very grateful for those opportunities, you know.
I love that.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick commercial break. I want to get into your journey to India after we come back. So don't go anywhere.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward.
You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pitbull, Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
And we're back.
I think a big thing is I also I came from parents who were both engineers, and, and acknowledging your privilege is so huge. People, I always feel like there's a sense that there's this struggling immigrant story and you're like, well, my parents, they worked very hard. Mm-hmm. There was a slow come up, but now they've done well for themselves. My parents as well paid for my college. And when people talk about, I always feel stupid being my dad paid, well, he always likes to remind me he paid $50,000 or whatever to get me an art degree, which I don't think it's an art degree at all. I was I did work. But it's this weird thing where I'm always I'm so lucky to have gotten this, in quotes, art degree. It wasn't an art degree, just in case my dad's listening. It was a lot more work than that. Give me a break. But I feel so privileged. I was able to move to LA right out of college and just start working because I didn't have this thing in the back of my mind being oh, wait, no, I should get a good job that allows me to pay my debt off. And it's truly I didn't really know what I was doing, but I was so blessed to come from my parents who worked so hard. Came to this country, learned English, which unfortunately from the Cosby Show, which now we try not to talk too much about, but just watching TV and picking it up, working in hotels to pay for their own university. And then that's the things people don't see, the immigrant life. It's you can look at us and be wow, your life is so easy. And it's not easy. My parents made it easy for me by doing all the hard work and allowing me to have this privilege to come and work here and be a podcaster, which is, that's the whole, sorry,
but that's
Dad.
The thing, that we see our parents work so hard, and subliminally and instinctively we start to emulate that same work ethic. Their work ethic, whether or not we are mindful of it or not, influences how we are.
Yeah.
And in the best way, I think. But okay, let's go back to you being in college. Eventually, you must have decided what your degree was going to, what you were going to study.
Yeah, so I studied political science, basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why did you decide to do that? Or what led you to that decision?
I was just, I was always politically engaged, probably not quite as engaged as I should have been necessarily. Mm-hmm. But, in high school, I helped to start my school's Gay Straight Alliance.
Oh, that's amazing.
And, I was part of my environmental club and it was, so I was always interested in politics. And so then when I got to college, I wanted to do more of it. Mm-hmm. And it was a really fascinating set of students that were doing this major, too. So it was fun. It was really nice. And I got to do a thesis, and we were able to apply for grants to go and travel to do research for the thesis and things like that. So it was
eye-opening.
Yeah.
So you graduate. And so what, are you kind of what do I do? Or did you kind of know you wanted to go to India and travel and oh, dance? Gosh. Or
would you guys visit India as a family a lot?
Yeah, we did. And my parents, actually, when I was a senior in college, decided to move back.
Oh.
My dad got a job opportunity there, so they were in India, too.
Mm-hmm.
And so were my grandparents. They were living with them. So, I went back to visit. I had a job offer here in the U.S., but then when I went back to India, it was so exciting to be there that I just decided to stay.
Amazing.
Wow. Yeah.
So you decided to stay without kind of like a job opportunity lined up?
I had a job. It wasn't a great job, but I had a job there. Or I had found a job.
Yeah. Was it related to city planning or politics? It was, or
well, I had just studied political science as an undergrad, so it was a human rights organization.
Oh.
Yeah. And then so I was doing, I did some work for a small nonprofit, and then I ended up writing a report for Amnesty International about the Bhopal gas leak that had happened.
Yeah.
So it happened in 1984, and we were doing like a 20-year analysis, like what had happened 20 years later, how were people still struggling with the impacts of that leak and families still responding to what they had faced on that day.
Mm-hmm.
But also the plant site had not been cleaned there after this enormous gas leak, and chemicals were leaching into the groundwater around it, and how were those issues affecting the residents around the plant. It was, yeah, so that report was published in 2004, so 20 years after the gas leak. So I did that, and then at that time, there was these massive slum evictions that were happening in the city of Delhi.
Mm-hmm.
So along the Yamuna River, there was a massive slum with something like 150,000 people whose homes were bulldozed.
Oh.
In the space of just a month or two.
Wow.
And I remember reading about it in the English press, and it was covered for a day or two, and then it just kind of dropped off of the English press. And I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that so many people had lost their homes in such a short amount of time. And it was all part of, you know, this was actually happening in many cities across India at the time, because India was growing. It was coming into its own as an economic superpower.
Right.
And I think the government, city governments were really conflicted, because they saw these slums, which are, you know, like shanty towns or whatever you want to call them. And those shanty towns really conflicted with their own self-image as a global superpower. And so there was this push to get rid of them. There was a push to kind of, in some ways, solve the problem, quote unquote, solve the problem by just making it disappear. And so there's some echoes to what's happening in Los Angeles.
I was just thinking the same thing. Yeah. That's just like, people think the answer to homelessness is to eradicate it or like cover it up because it's not polished. Or it doesn't make our streets look good to have tents on them, when really it angers me so much when I see people giving a shit about that.
Yeah.
Like, or like when I see a cop like harass someone for being on a sidewalk.
What I think people don't realize is that homelessness here in Los Angeles, I think, is just a symptom of a broader housing crisis that we're facing Los Angeles. And I think that if we were better, right now in Los Angeles, there is all this anger, as you're saying, between people who are in housing and people who are living on the streets. And I think people, some residents who are in housing feel resentful that there's tents on sidewalks and that there's, you know, people living in parks and people taking over public spaces.
Yeah.
But I think our anger really needs to be directed at our elected representatives
who
haven't provided shelter beds, who haven't provided houses, who haven't provided the kind of services that people need to get out of homelessness, who haven't made sure that people who are facing homelessness have the kind of safety nets that they need to keep them housed, because it's way easier to keep someone in housing than it is to house them once they're already on the streets or in their cars. You know, I knock on a lot of doors for this campaign. And when I talk to people, you usually open up the conversation at people's doors and say, you know, what are the main issues that are facing you in this neighborhood? And people will say, oh, there's people living in campers on my street. You know, there's people living in their cars on the street. And I've called and nobody, you know, they're not, people aren't getting rid of them. And they're angry about it. And the thing I say to them is, your elected representatives should be making parking lots available for people who are sleeping in their cars, parking lots with bathrooms, parking lots with a caseworker there who can help that person get back into a home.
Just have some empathy rather than anger and I don't know, closed-mindedness.
Right. But I think once you say that to someone, once you redirect their anger at the place where it should be directed, it's actually really, you know, it's very powerful, you know, because I think they're like, oh, yeah, of course, that makes way more sense.
They're not blaming the victim.
No, and I think when given the opportunity, everyone wants to respond to what is clearly a humanitarian crisis with empathy and with compassion. It's just that because of the inaction or incompetence of the actions taken by our elected representatives right now, we're faced with this horrible situation where, you know, we're not some, you know, you want to be compassionate. And now what is the path to be compassionate here and be effective? We're not being given that option here in Los Angeles. And that's really what my campaign has been about.
Yeah. Well, I live on the east side of LA, and there is an apartment complex right across the street from me. It like shut down a couple years ago. I've been there. I've been in the same place for maybe like about 7 years. And just last month or a month or two ago, they opened it up as a hotel. And next to, and then this, there was an abandoned building. It's always been abandoned the whole time I've been there. Now it's going to be an Erewhon, which is the most expensive supermarket in existence in LA.
Wow.
And it just made me so mad. I remember seeing flyers like notifying the neighborhood, being like, this is what's happening. Feel free to call this number if you don't agree with this decision. And I would call and it would just get redirected somewhere else. And I was so angry. And the idea of city planning, like there is someone that decided all these. In the end, it's money. Like, someone paid enough money to make a hotel in a place where, like, maybe affordable housing should have been, or a supermarket where X, Y, and Z should have been. So the more I see that happen, the angrier I'm getting. Because I'm just like, how can you build a fancy supermarket with, like, $10 little things of granola with, like, a tent, like, right there? Like, that's...
Yeah, and I think the thing... I honestly think we could have it all.
Yeah,
you know, I think we could have the Erewhon and the affordable housing, but we need to work for that. You know, we really need to work for that. We have to make sure that we're making space. And I think for me, the affordable housing is way more important and way more urgent right now.
Yeah.
And our priorities have been completely flipped in LA.
Yeah.
You know, so we have had, I think in the city of LA over the past 4 or 5 years, our campaign's research found that 87% of the housing built has been market rate or luxury housing, and only 13% has been affordable. And in the district where I'm running, District 4, it's been 93% luxury or market rate housing and only 7% affordable.
Wow.
Yeah. And city council actually approves. I mean, there's a planning. It's a complicated process.
Yeah.
But ultimately, city council determines how we use land in the city. And to me, the way in which we use land, land use is our representation of what our city values.
Yeah.
You know?
That's what angers me, the land use.
Yeah.
Like, if they could just use the land, that plot of land, it's giant. And they could have used it in so many different ways.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It really is. The amount of, like, luxury lofts that go up that you're like, okay, well, this has, they've been saying that's, there's been a now leasing sign on this building for the 4 years I've lived in this neighborhood. No one can afford to live there.
Yeah. There is, it really feels like there's this big disconnect between what is being built and what is so needed.
Exactly.
Right.
Like, I was just like, we don't need a hotel here.
Yeah.
Like, when I realized it was going to be this like fancy hotel with a pool and everything, I was like, sure, it's like maybe a luxury thing to be like, I can go to this pool and whatever, but I don't need, that's all we need. Like, in this part of LA, in any part of LA, like, there's just, there is a huge disconnect.
Yeah,
and so,
there's a really big disconnect. Yeah. And for some reason, we seem to be only getting the luxury.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
And we really need to be getting so much more of the other stuff.
Yeah.
And that's what we need to be pushing for. That has to be the urgent priority of our council, of our entire city, really.
Well, it's interesting to see how your kind of work with that started in India and, like, seeing that world and then realizing, like, we live in one of the biggest economies of the world and are having the same issues.
Yeah.
Like that's...
We're no different. Parallels are there. Yeah.
Like, we can't hide this homelessness. People, like... And you see people with nice tents. Like, they're like, the last of my money I'm going to spend on a good tent and then just live in there because realistically this city doesn't give a fuck about me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so frustrating because it's like, this person...
Is a person.
Yeah, like also like they're not people, the idea of homelessness, it's like these aren't, you can't just assume these people are homeless because, oh, they don't want to work.
It's like things my dad would say in his
old age, like where you're just like, that's just, you're being like.
A little ignorant.
Yeah, you're being ignorant about the situation. It's like, no, these people aren't choosing to not work. Like you don't know that person's not working.
Yeah.
You don't know. It's just. The situation in LA is so dire that you could be making money and still not even be remotely close to afford to rent in the city.
Yeah.
Like the amount I work to live in a tiny apartment.
Yeah.
I don't go home.
Yeah.
And I live in a 2x2, it feels like sometimes with 15 pets.
Right.
I can't do anything. I just go. I know I just have to go to work and pay my rent. And
that's all you can really do. And even some people don't even have that luxury.
Yeah, not at all. And even when you think about the minimum wage in California or the U.S. in general, it hasn't really changed in the past 10 years. I remember that, like, at the end of the year, beginning of this new year, people were like, a 10-year, like, what's changed in the last 10 years? And I looked at the minimum, there's, like, one image of, like, the minimum wage, and it's, like, not even.
Yeah. Well, thing. In LA, it's gone up to $15, yeah. Which is good. But yeah. The problem is that the cost of housing
exactly.
has risen so much that the question is really, what does that $15 an hour yeah. buy you? Does mm-hmm. it buy you the ability to thrive in the city?
Mm-hmm.
Or
barely make it.
Yeah. Or is yeah. life still continuing to be as hard as it ever was, despite yeah. the fact yeah. that your wages are going up? And I think when people talk about folks who are experiencing homelessness using drugs or having yeah. mental illness. Mm-hmm. I think the thing that I would say in response to that is if you have an underlying mental health issue or mm-hmm. If you struggle with addiction, if you're housed, often you're able to manage those issues.
Mm-hmm.
And now our housing market here has gotten so tight. Vacancy rates are so low. People mm-hmm. are wanting to kick lower paying tenants out and bring in higher paying renters. Yeah. I think if you have a moment where you miss a payment or you have some kind of a personal crisis, you're out on the streets much more mm-hmm. frequently than you were before.
Yeah.
You know, and so if you're at the vulnerable end of the spectrum in whatever way, whether mm-hmm. it be financially, whether it be through mental health issues or whatever, in a housing market that is this intense,
yeah.
I think it is much harder to stay in your housing.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's a big part of why we've seen such a rise in homelessness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's not, you know, it's not like we have more mental illness than we did before. You know, we've always had mental illness issues.
Yeah.
It's just that we're no longer able to stay in our housing.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that that's really, really important to think about as, you know, because I don't want to, of course, you see people who have mental illness who are living on the streets, and it's very obvious. So I don't want to deny that those mm-hmm. issues exist.
Not. Yeah, yeah.
But I think the issue is that we haven't set up a system to make sure that people who are experiencing those issues get the help that they need to stay housed
yeah.
or get the help that they need to get back into housing once yeah. they lose their homes. And once you're on the streets, that's absolute worst place to manage any of those
of
things.
Of course.
No. Absolute worst.
There's no resources.
Yeah, yeah. No resources. And you'd get very disturbed sleep at night,
yeah.
you know, which then contributes.
It just makes everything
makes
worse.
Everything so much worse.
Yeah, it's a cycle. It's like this. It's a snake eating its own tail. It's just, yeah, it's
yeah,
never ending.
Exactly.
I want to just go quickly back to you being in India.
Yeah.
And you're trying to combat this problem with that they're experiencing in the slums.
Yeah. So I worked with groups of slum dwellers who were organizing around things like getting toilets, getting running water in their neighborhoods, getting underground sanitation, but also fighting for land rights.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, some of them were facing eviction and then fighting to make sure that they were able to stay in their homes.
So at that point, are you thinking for yourself, like, I'm going to be in India for the long term? Like, this is my fight?
Oh, my gosh. Even...
Oh, sorry. Like, no, I can relate to what you're going to say is because, like, I wouldn't know either.
I'm terrible at thinking yeah. about next steps.
Yeah.
So, no, I never thought about that. I just thought this was such an interesting moment to be able to do this work. Mm-hmm. I found an incredible group to work with. It was a group that was kind of an alliance of groups that were working across the city on similar issues. And so I was just enjoying it mm-hmm. and able to do it and learning from it. And I just kept on doing it. And the only thing I realized at that point was I love thinking about things from the lens of the city. I think cities are amazing.
Yeah.
I think they're exciting. And I knew I wanted to study more about cities. And that's why I ended up deciding to get my master's in urban planning. But beyond that, I had no idea of I'm going to stay in India. I'm going to come back to the
U.S. You were
US.
Just going.
I was just going with it.
In the moment. I respect that. I really respect that.
I wouldn't recommend it to everybody.
I mean, it's a terrifying way to live coming from myself. But like, because everyone else is like 5-year plan. And I'm like, what's tomorrow like?
So where did you end up after you decided you were going to go get your master's?
I have a master's in urban planning from MIT.
Mm. Okay.
And so that back in Boston.
It's funny that you wanted to get out of there.
I know.
Kind
I
of
just
stayed
never
in that
left.
Area.
Yeah. Well, now here I am.
Were your parents still in India when you left?
Yes. So they were there. They had moved to Japan for a while and then they went back to India.
You kind of followed in your dad's footsteps, getting your master's in the U.S.
Yeah,
that's exactly what you did.
Yeah, wow. That's true. Yeah. That's a great. Yeah, I never thought about that.
I mean, it's like a subconscious thing. You don't really think about it.
I know. Repeat the stories of your parents.
It's kind
of
a beautiful coincidence.
I know.
Wow, that's cool. What did they go to Japan for?
For my dad's work.
Wow,
they were living
in
Tokyo.
Your dad has a nice job. I know. He just gets to get...
He's the Globetrotters.
I know.
Yeah.
He lives a good life.
That's nice. So, okay, so you go and you get your master's degree.
Mm-hmm.
And you went back to India?
Yeah, I went back to India after that for a few years and then came back to LA, basically.
So what were you doing in India the second time you went?
Same thing, except I started a nonprofit that was working on these same issues. I moved to a city called Chennai and started a group there called Transparent Chennai, and we were kind of working with a different alliance of slum dwellers and people who were doing informal sector work. So they were like street vendors and flower sellers and fish vendors and domestic workers. And they were all fighting for similar things. And we created research and maps and data that would support their advocacy efforts.
Yeah.
So that's what Transparent Chennai did. And again, it was great and fun. We raised money from all of these international philanthropic organizations. We were able to get grants from the Ford Foundation, from the Rockefeller Foundation.
That's so significant.
It was cool.
I just love that you were fighting for the people that needed to have champions and warriors on their side. You know what I mean? Like, because they
were already doing that.
But it's so overwhelming to feel small, I think. Like, I'm trying to like think about how it's very significant to you coming from some, like, you have a master's, like, you know how the city works, you know how the macro view is, to help others kind of make sense of it all. I think it's so important.
And they were already doing that work. All we did was India was growing and changing and urban governance was changing. And so we were able to help these groups to plug into these kind of changes.
But that's so necessary.
Yes, it was.
So necessary.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah.
I want to ask you about you coming to LA after a quick commercial break.
Okay.
And we'll be right back.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Pluma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds from Mars, and Two Door Cinema Club.
And we're back. So you mentioned before the break that you ended up coming to LA.
Yeah.
But so far in your timeline, you haven't been to LA, or am I mistaken?
I'd spent some time in LA. So the part of the timeline that we haven't talked about is that I got married somewhere in this period.
Right.
And I got
married. Your social life.
Yes.
that whole aspect of being a human.
Yes. My husband and I met in college. So we've known each other since we were both 18.
Wow.
But we haven't been dating the whole time. But we ended up, during my master's, we ended up getting back together. And he was in LA because he's a writer.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Wow. So he works in television.
So you had been to LA already.
I had visited him here and things like that. And then moved here when we, you know, I'd been in India for a long time. We were married and living in different countries.
Whoa.
He moved to India for a year, but then his job, he got a good job offer here again. And so then we were again apart. And then finally, we were like, okay, it's time to be in the same place. Yeah.
Yeah.
So then I came to LA.
And were you intending? I'm terrified of the future and I never think about it. But when you moved here after coming from being so involved in the city that you were living in India, were you at all thinking, like, in the back of your mind, like getting involved in the city in LA?
Yeah. I was, you know, when I moved here, I wasn't sure whether what I would be able to do here.
Mm-hmm.
But I really loved LA and knew that the city was also facing some challenges.
Yeah.
Our homelessness issue was not as acute then as it is now, but mm-hmm. it's already, I mean, the city is so fascinating and mm-hmm. I really love it so much.
Yeah.
And I knew that I would be able to find interesting work here.
How did it start for you in LA then?
The first intensive experience that I had with the city was I actually worked briefly for the city of LA. I wrote a report on how the city was responding to homelessness in 2014.
Okay.
And it was for the city administrative officer, who's the person who kind of manages the city's budgets. And it was just a temporary assignment that I got from his office. But it was an incredible opportunity to look at the broader homelessness issue. There was about 23,000 people in the city experiencing homelessness then. Now there's 37,000 So it's gone up by a lot in just five or 6 years. But at that time, the city, I mean, it was already a big number.
Yeah.
And so my report kind of looked at how the city was responding to the issue, how much we were spending on it. And it turns out we were spending a lot of money on it already, but that most of that money wasn't going towards helping people get off of the streets. It was going towards enforcement and putting people into jail, and which was not effective either at clearing the streets. It was just a temporary solution that ended up leaving people worse off than they had been before.
Yeah.
And so the report talked about how the city could do better in terms of actually putting much more of that money into solutions that would make sure that people were getting off of the streets permanently.
Yeah, not just putting a Band-Aid over it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so we're still having that conversation at the city level, I think. That's part of the conversation that my campaign has been engaged in. But there's been a big push in the city and the county to be much more proactive about responding to this issue, which I'm very excited about. We have a lot more money going into homeless housing. We have a lot more money going into services through taxes that we all agreed to pay for.
Yeah.
But the question now is really about how we spend that money and how it gets distributed and what is the system that we're setting up here to respond to that issue. And I think that's still a question that we need to think about. We need to fight for a vision for how we deliver those services that really works for us as a city.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow.
What I really appreciate about your campaign is, like, it's kind of similar to the way Bernie Sanders goes about his campaign is, like, he is able to reach the youth because you break it down in a way that I could understand. And, like, it's not it's not just, like,
I agree.
City planning jargon that, like, I'm sure I would only – like, it's not like – I don't need a master's to understand why you're doing what you're doing and why it's important. And I think
I
that's
so
important. I also
feel like some of that is they use that to distract us.
Mm-hmm.
And 100%.
And it works. I'm like, oh.
It's in every field, in law, in any kind of courtroom. Like, they just distract you. Like, it's just, so I really appreciate your campaign and, like, even your use of social media and everything. You use it in a way to really get your message out there. And I think that's why people are excited by your campaign and excited by you as a person, because even just talking to you for the last, like, 30, 40 minutes, I can tell you care.
Right.
And that's important to me.
Yeah.
It's important to everyone to have a city council person that gives a shit. Excuse my language. Sorry.
No, I think it's right. So I want to just, I want to talk a little bit about what we've had in LA so far.
Please, yes.
We've had a city council that has operated in near secrecy for decades here.
Right.
We've had incredibly low voter participation. So the person I'm running against won. So there's a primary and then hopefully there'll be either a runoff or, you know, there's a number of positive outcomes, but usually an incumbent always wins their primary.
Right.
In the previous election, where that was his first election, he won the primary. He won that primary with 3,500-ish votes.
Whoa. Okay.
In a district where there's over 250,000 people,
that's
170,000 registered voters.
Uh-huh.
So you can see the level of participation that has existed here in LA. It's just so small. So small. And I think he won the generals with maybe something around 10,000 or 11,000 votes out of a massive district, right?
Yeah.
So, and this is true across the districts. It, when we have gone and knocked on doors for, you know, we've knocked on so many doors in the district, most people do not know that there is a city council election coming up.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot name their city council member. That person has never come out to talk to them. They've not tried to communicate with them in any way. City council has operated in secrecy for decades.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now we have an opportunity because the city council elections are overlapping with the federal elections for the first time. And they did this to encourage voter turnout.
Okay.
Right?
That's good.
So that's great.
Yeah.
So we now have the potential that people who are energized by the Democratic primary are going to come out on March 3rd, which is the date of the election, and they're going to vote for their candidate, you know, be it Bernie, be it Warren, be it Biden.
Oh, God. Sorry. Sorry. Whoever
it is. No, it's fine. Whoever it is, they're going to be energized to get their vision of the Democratic Party out there. And we have an opportunity now to say, come into the municipal election, too. We're here. Vote for us.
Yeah.
We're giving you an option. We're going to tell you about the powers of the council. Our council is incredibly powerful. They have a massive budget, $10 billion plus dollars. They control so many different departments. They control LAX. The DWP, which is our water, your public utility, which is a massive public utility and can move us towards our climate goals and our environmental goals if we use it right. They control LAPD. They control the port, the Port of Los Angeles, which is one of, you know, I think it's one of the biggest ports in the country or maybe the biggest port. Anyway, they have a huge amount of control over everything that is LA.
Yeah.
And so we now have an opportunity to tell people, get involved in shaping your city.
Yeah.
Do you find it difficult to take public transit? Well, you can change that. You know, vote for a different city council person who shares your priority around that. Do you ride your bicycle and find it unsafe? Then vote your city council person out and vote in somebody who cares about these issues.
Yeah.
Do you find our response to homelessness lacking? You know, do you find our response to housing prices lacking? Then vote in someone who makes that a priority for them. And that's an exciting message to be able to tell people, you know, and I think it's an incredibly important message to be getting out.
Yeah,
I agree.
I mean, that's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on, because I feel like, sure, I'm like following you on social media, but there was something about you that I was like, this is a person I am, just based off what I was reading and what I was seeing, I was like, and it's hard for me, like there's certain council members, like I have interacted with a few just through like my work and stuff that I'm kind of like, okay, what do you do?
What do you stand for?
I don't, I don't really understand who or what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And with you, I get it. And I like see it literally like in bullet points, like I'm seeing it.
Yeah.
And that makes me happy. And that makes me want to follow your work. I want to support you.
Thank
and I want other people to support you.
Thank you.
And I want to make it also like as easy as possible. Like I should, we should have her on our podcast. Like this is the type of person we want to like lift up and be like,
thank you.
You're doing the work and it's clear and I can see what you're doing and there's no secrecy. That's the thing. There's no secrecy.
Mm-hmm.
It's the transparency is amazing.
Yeah. And I think when it boils down to it, like if we can utilize this platform in a way to motivate people just like us in LA to go out and vote, or even in your city, like wherever you are, you have the ability to change your city if you're unhappy with something. You just have to rally together and realize like voting does matter.
I think that's what it does.
I have to battle this disillusionment, I mean, because sometimes when everything seems like shit, when you're also maybe depressed and having anxiety about your own life, and for me, being Syrian and kind of going through a really jaded time about anything changing in the world, it's really hard to think that voting matters because the world isn't changing in a way that you that is understandable for you. And this is coming from my personal experience. Like I've had to really motivate myself to be like, it does matter. And seeing people care like you motivates me to if someone at a higher up level cares, then that gives me relief because it doesn't feel like I'm alone.
No.
And it's so easy to be jaded about voting or just getting involved. And
I'm thinking like, oh, my vote doesn't count.
No, not at all.
But it starts from it starts from
home. I mean,
home.
It does. That doesn't mean why not all. It doesn't count. Oh, yeah, but, like, that's
gotta,
how I feel.
You got to grow it. You got to start small, grow a little bigger.
Yeah. And so I think I can really relate to that feeling of feeling so lost and not thinking anything makes a difference, but it does. I promise you it does. And it electing someone that cares is all the difference. And I think, like, I connected with Mitra like a month ago at City Hall. There was a protest for anti-war in Iran.
Yes.
And I'm going to be honest, it was not the biggest turnout, but the people there had the sense of community that I really loved. Like, seeing Mitra supported, because I'm not Iranian, but I was there to support the cause and no war, obviously. But I think making the effort to go out and protest, go out and go to your rallies, go out and vote, and seeing the community that you're a part of that also cares, that makes a difference.
It
like
does.
I wasn't feeling the most motivated to go to the protest. I'm not going to pretend that like I made a sign. I was there to support, and when I was there, I realized like there's a community out there that is passionate and that gives a shit, and I want to give a shit too.
Yep.
So just little baby steps.
Thank you for doing that, and I want to underscore that, because I think what has happened in Los Angeles, and actually in many parts of California, is that the people who've participated in local politics have been on the more conservative end of the spectrum. And so I think now the quiet majority, the majority that I think is more progressive, that I think has a more generous vision of what the city should be doing, mm-hmm. about how we should be treating people who are experiencing any kind of vulnerability, how we should be lifting up residents mm-hmm. and supporting them. That vision, we have an opportunity to make that a reality by awakening people who have so far not been participating in our local politics.
Yeah.
You know, and I think people are energized by our national politics mm-hmm. right now. Mm-hmm. But just electing, like, I don't know what's going to happen in November. I really don't at the
it's
national
really
level. Scary.
Up, it's really
it's terrifying.
It's terrifying, right? But even if the best outcome happens there, we still need to have change at every level of government to be able to move with the urgency that we need to get to the goals that we need to get to.
It
like,
matters.
You know, on climate, for example, mm-hmm. we have to have coordinated action at every level for us to be able to get to where we need to be.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
we have no time, you know, and I just don't see urgency in our elected representatives.
Yeah.
I don't see that.
No.
I don't feel that when they speak. I don't see that in their actions. But don't we all feel that.
Yeah, we all
feel it viscerally, right?
Yeah.
On a day-to-day level, we feel that urgency.
I'm on a constant edge of a panic attack everywhere I go. Like, I'm on the – I genuinely feel like I'm standing on the edge of a cliff, like, the majority of the day. So
– exactly.
That's to utilize that anxiety in a positive way is so – it's just necessary.
It's absolutely necessary.
Yeah.
And that urgency is what is needed in order to make the kind of big changes that we need to make.
Yeah.
And we have to harness that. It can't just be elected representatives. It also has to be a constituency that is vocal about making changes and
mm-hmm.
that wants to make changes. And we're building that. You know, whatever happens in our election, what we've managed to do is create a coalition of people who suddenly know who their council member is,
mm-hmm. yeah.
who suddenly know what the potential of council
yeah.
is, and who are willing to get engaged. Like, that might have been a small protest that you went to. I think the next one will be bigger.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And the next one will be even bigger.
But the impact that it made on just my outlook, I know was felt throughout the whole group. And I kept thinking about that on the way home and just being grateful that people cared. And I know that, like, the next time I go, I'll bring more friends. The next time I go, I'll share it on my media some more. You know what I mean? So it's like, I brought that up as an example of, like, I'm not going to pretend I'm always just, like, the most politically active person. Like, I'm jaded and sad all the time.
Yeah. Same.
So, but it does matter. And I think the minute you're there and making an effort and seeing people make an effort with you, I think that's what's empowering.
Mm-hmm.
And I think having someone in charge like you make an effort and care, and your passion
mm-hmm.
and your, like, we know what you stand for.
Yeah.
It's clear.
Yeah.
I feel very grateful to, I feel like all we had to do in the campaign was to just give people a space to put their energy into, you know, like, it's not even that I'm not saying anything so smart or radical or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's literally just saying you have all this energy for change and let me give you a place to put that at the local level. Mm-hmm. And the response has been incredible. We have 90 people signed up to go Canvas for us this weekend.
That's amazing.
It's mind-blowing.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
There has not been, to my knowledge, city council races that have garnered this level of volunteer engagement in the past.
I've been in LA for 7 years almost, and I think that's completely factual. Like, right? I don't know who my council person is right now. Like, you know what I mean?
I know mine. He's a blowhard.
I mean, like, I kind of know, but it's not like I don't follow him on social media.
Thing. Like, I'm not, the one I know right now, I am not impressed by.
Yeah.
Also, I potentially think his offices were raided, and I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
That shouldn't be a thing. You should never look and see your council members' offices were raided. You're like, oh my God, what is going on? And that's the city we live in, unfortunately, and that's why we need people like you. Also, your relatability factor is off the charts.
Thank you.
You're so human, you know? Sometimes you hate when you really... Like, I was watching the show The Politician, and I was like, this is spot on. These people have been working their whole lives being like, this is how I need to be to build my resume. Mm-hmm. Like, it's almost robotic. And then you meet someone like you who's like, I kind of just want to help.
Yeah.
It's not like I have been checking off the resume since 5 years old, where I started wearing a suit and tie or whatever it is. And I'm like, yeah, we don't need that anymore. We're moving beyond that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, this isn't how the world works anymore.
We need humans to help humans.
Yeah, I don't want anyone who's just doing this to look like, you know, like, this is my career and I look good doing it, so I'm doing it. And then it doesn't trickle down into the community in any way to help. And
I really love.
That's very frustrating.
Selfishly, I don't want to call you out in a weird way, but I love that you didn't come in like in a suit. you look just like us.
Audience, and I love I'm wearing that. A sweatshirt.
Yeah, but I love that about you. Like, you're not putting up a front, and you're an LA resident trying to make the city the best it could be, and so. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for the work you do.
Thank you for
having me. Let's remind everyone about the dates for voting.
So also, like, how can they find you? How can they support your campaign?
Okay, so the website is Nithya for the City, NITHYA, NithyaForTheCity.com. At Instagram, Nithya for the City. On Twitter, we're different because I was verified. So Nithya V. Raman on Twitter. But, you know, you can donate through the website. You can sign up. If you live in LA, you can sign up to Canvas. You can come to an event. We have a lot of public events that are happening that are always on the website, or we put it up on social media. Tell your friends.
Please tell your friends.
Yeah, tell your friends. I think we just have to get the word out, you know, about the election coming up. So the election is on March 3rd, but voting actually starts before then. So mail-in ballots go out on February 3rd. And now LA County's voting is changing, so you can vote over an 11-day period, I believe starting on February 22nd. And you can find out more information about that on the LA County's website. But you can vote at a set of polling centers, and I think you can vote at any polling center.
Okay.
So it makes it easier to vote because you don't have to go on that one day.
Yeah.
You can go over, you know, over that period of time. And it hopefully will bring a lot more people to vote in this election. And you know, anywhere in the city, whoever you are, just tell your friends about our campaign. We can, you know, I look around this city, I look at our increasing population of people experiencing homelessness, I look at rising home prices, I look at our terrible air, I look at our terrible traffic, and I think we deserve better than this.
Yeah.
And we can have it.
Yeah.
We can have it.
Yeah. And also, if you're listening to this, you don't live in LA, but you have family members or friends who live in LA, tell them about Nithya.
Yeah.
Tell them what's going on. And I know I always feel like when you say like District 4, it's not a small area. Mm-mm. District 4 spans.
It's huge.
It's enormous.
A large part of main LA. I don't know.
Central, I guess?
It's central-ish. So it goes all the way from Silver Lake, Los Feliz, all of the Hollywood Hills, into Sherman Oaks and Toluca Lake in the valley. And then in the south, in Miracle Mile area, near LACMA, parts of Hollywood, parts of Koreatown.
Yeah.
It's huge.
It's a huge area.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
huge.
And so I'm sure you have friends that live there.
Yeah.
So just let them know, you know, and also everything we just spoke about will be in our description. All of the links will be tagged so you guys can easily go find everything, find all the information. And and follow Nithya and see what's going on and support where you can, you know?
Yeah.
Even the small things help. I think it doesn't help, but it does.
You never know who's going to see your story or your post or whatever and be motivated by it. I think it's more important than you realize. And so just scroll down in the notes section or wherever you're listening to this and mark it on your calendar. Go vote and follow Nithya.
Thank you, guys.
You're doing the work. You're doing the good work.
Yeah, and we can all do the work together.
Yes.
We can get there. Thank you guys so much. This is such a great conversation.
Thank you.
Glad.
I so appreciate it.
You came through and it worked out.
Yeah.
We're so happy. I'm glad I sent that creepy DM.
Hey, lady.
It all worked out.
Flattering.
Yeah.
Very flattering.
Yeah. So if you learned anything from this, just throw out that cold DM. Yeah, I'm kidding.
Yeah, that's the moral of today's episode.
I'm just gonna wrap us out, I guess. Okay, yeah, this is Ethnically Ambiguous, Ethnically Amb, AMB on Twitter, and Ethnically Ambig, AMBIG on Instagram. I'm Shireen, Shirohero on Instagram, and Shirohero666 on Twitter.
And I'm at Anna Hosni on Twitter. And we retweet a lot of at Nithya, your Twitter page.
Mm-hmm. Nithya V. Raman.
Oh, God, I'm like... panicking.
Sorry, guys. Sorry.
It's okay.
So
we retweet on our Twitter, and then I also post a lot of your posts on our Instagram stories.
Oh, cool.
Our Ethnically Ambig Instagram story. So you'll
You might have already seen what's going on, but it's important.
We're not circulating, just, guys. Move, check it out.
Yeah, check it out. And until next time, just stay active.
Stay active. Stay voting.
Yeah, stay voting, and we'll see you soon.
See you soon. Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.